From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Couple of birthdays, by the way. Happy birthday to our friend, actor-singer Robert Davi, and to my granddaughter, Ariana. Here's what's happening. The old adage, it's not the heat, it's the humidity, will come into play more often in more places because of climate change, with life-altering results in southern U.S. cities from Miami to Atlanta to Washington and even northern ones such as New York, Chicago, and Seattle. As temperatures rise toward the end of the century, less than an hour of activity outdoors, less than an hour outdoors in the shade could cause a moderately fit individual to suffer heat stroke, says a climatologist. That's kind of scary. President Barack Obama has asked the U.S. Congress to approve $500 million to train and equip what he described as moderate Syrian opposition forces. The funds would help Syrians defend against forces aligned with President Assad. The aid would also counter the Islamist militants such as ISIS. I don't know. Not a good idea. Iraq's prime minister says that he hopes jets from Russia and Belarus will turn the tide against the rebels in the coming days there. He said the process of buying U.S. jets and having them help out, well, that didn't go anywhere. And he said the militants' advance could have been avoided if air cover had been in place. Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 likely flew, they say, into the southern Indian Ocean on autopilot with an unresponsive crew. Australian authorities say divulging new details about what they believe happened during the missing plane's final hours. The information emerging as officials announced a southward shift in the underwater search for the Boeing 777, which disappeared March 8th with 239 people on board. The Australian officials say they believe now the plane was on autopilot throughout its entire journey over the Indian Ocean until it simply ran out of fuel. They cited the straight track on which the aircraft flew, according to electronic handshakes that it periodically exchanged with satellites. Still another confusing episode. Let's check in with the author of The Downing of TWA Flight 800, James Sanders, who has been with us since this bizarre disappearance. James, now I don't even understand this one. This is even more confusing.
One thing can be said for certain. Well, several things, but one thing can be said for certain. At somewhere, some high level of the federal government, somebody is demonstrating just how pathetic a cover-up can be and still be believed by CNN. Because first of all, the plane was headed north, not south, and an expert analysis here in the United States said that there were multiple the air traffic control tape had multiple changes in it.
Yeah.
You know, it had been altered. And so that tells you right there, the Air Force, the Malaysian Air Force, their radar tracked it, hanging a left, coming down, crossing Malaysia, and turning west. And as far as their radar could track it, it was headed west, not south. Now, if you believe that people who were passed out or dead can make all those things happen, then you need to work for CNN.
And tell me, Jim, being on autopilot for that long, I mean, who clipped the autopilot? Who turned it on?
Yeah, who turned it on and who put in those kinds of coordinates? I mean, that's, you know, I want to pass out now, but I want to go die within sight of ice. You know,
yeah.
That's the, you know, if they had said that and that had been clipped out of the air traffic control tape, then maybe you got something going. I will tell you right now, if, as they start searching anywhere in the next year, they find wreckage, it's because that plane was neutralized somewhere over in Somalia, Yemen, Pakistan, or somewhere over in there, and they managed to grab enough pieces to salt the area.
You may
be
right.
It is impossible for this scenario to be factual.
Get stranger. James, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Jim Sanders. Our Coast to Coast guest, Terry Hansen, is dead. Very great individual, and it is with sadness we report on his death. Still another Coast to Coast guest. One of his most influential books in ufology is called The Missing Times. Terry Hansen died quietly in his sleep. He had a massive heart attack. According to his doctor, he felt no pain. More than 100 more cases and 34 deaths from the new respiratory disease MERS, the coronavirus, has now been reported by Saudi officials. The cases date back to late February and came to light after an analysis of hospital records. The World Health Organization says now 820 cases of MERS, but 35% of them have died. Parents should replace juice and fizzy drinks with jugs of water at mealtimes, according to diet experts, advising to reduce the children's sugar intake and cut the risk of obesity, high blood pressure, and diabetes. Senior health scientists said that sugar-sweetened drinks were the biggest sources of sugar intake across all ages, particularly among children and teenagers, and they want you to replace it with water. Dr. Betty Martini spent 22 years in the medical field. She's the founder of the Mission Possible International, which educates all of us on the dangers of aspartame. Betty, well, I guess drinking water instead of some of this other stuff, that's not all bad, huh?
Well, I tell you what, George, I have actually read that article, and I agree with about 75% of it, but my problem is with what's in the water. Yeah, I mean, I have an alkaline machine, but you know they've got drugs, aspartame, sucralose,
fluoride,
and all this kind of business in here. When I read the article, I had to laugh because it did say that sugar may increase the risk of type 2 diabetes, and that's downright silly. An elevated blood sugar level is a result of having diabetes, not the cause. And as someone once said, assuming an elevated blood sugar level is the cause of diabetes is like assuming that coughing is the cause of pneumonia. It doesn't have absolutely anything to do with it. Diabetes develops most commonly because the pancreas is injured and is unable to produce enough insulin. That's type 1. Or because the body's tissues become resistant to insulin, requiring more insulin than the pancreas can produce to keep the blood sugar normal. That's type 2. And type 2, you do it to yourself, but sugar does some bad things, but it doesn't have anything to do with triggering diabetes. The obesity epidemic and the diabetes epidemic is caused by aspartame, and most all the doctors I work with are absolutely in agreement.
It's a good wake-up call for parents, though, Betty, isn't it?
Yes, it is a wake-up call. And then, since we found the studies on aspartame, knowing that it caused autism and cleft palate and all this kind of stuff, and the dairy products that they're putting in school now with the lack of labeling and putting aspartame and all this stuff, giving children anything, or milk with RBGH, and young children, you know, you can get diabetes from drinking a lot of milk. So water is a good thing if they gave them good water. You remember Jesse Ventura showing on his video how they were putting drugs in the water. So you want to make sure when you're working with our children that they get pure good water. And yes, it does. It will help cut child obesity.
Thank you so much, Betty. I really appreciate everything you've done over the years for us here on Coast to Coast, bringing especially the information about the dangers of aspartame. Well, there is still a missing L.A. firefighter somewhere out there in the Los Padres National Forest, but there are others still missing. In a moment, David Politis joins us again. His latest work, Missing 411, The Devil's in the Detail. More incredible stories of people simply vanishing. David's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. This world just continues to get stranger and stranger and stranger. We're bringing in David Politis. David, of course, noted author, Missing 411, The Devil's in the Detail. As we talk about missing people, I've got to tell you, wherever I go, all the speaking engagements I attend, this is the one topic that people come up to me and they are petrified. What's going on, they say. And, David, we've got more cases, this one of a missing firefighter. This has got to be as strange as any of them, David.
Yeah, George, it kind of fits that profile that we've been looking at for the last 5 years, and certain elements at this early stage of the search seem to point towards it fitting that specific workup that we do.
Tell us what we know about Mike Herdman, the missing firefighter.
So he went hiking up in the Los Padres National Forest in an area called the Sespe Wilderness on June 13th with a fellow firefighter paramedic from Arcadia. Mike's a married man, father, has a small daughter. He has a lot of experience in the woods. The guy he was with didn't have a lot of experience, but they hiked far in to the wilderness, started to set up camp. Mike brought his dog with him. And just as they were setting up camp, Mike was wearing a pair of shorts and a shirt, and that's it. And for some reason, his dog just took off straight into the woods. Well, the individual that Mike was with saw Mike take off running into the woods for the dog named Duke. And that was the last that Tyler Byers, the other firefighter, ever saw of Mike Herdman. And Tyler stuck around, called for Mike during the night, yelled for him throughout the night, eventually gave up and decided to hike out the next day, which was an all-day deal. So by the time that search and rescue finally got on it, it was probably a day and a half into the disappearance. Now, what's interesting is that in the last 5 years, we've been doing research into the missing people in the woods scenario. And a couple of things about this are exactly on key for what we found. Okay. Namely, a lot of people disappear with a dog or chasing a dog into the wilderness. And this is exactly what happened to Mike. Second part of that scenario is when people disappear, when they're found without shoes or other pieces of clothing. Well, Mike disappeared with no shoes.
And now, did he have shoes on when he went running into the woods?
No.
He did not. Okay.
Which is kind of strange. I mean, you think maybe you take a 10, 20 seconds, just throw your
shoes on. Put your shoes on, yeah.
But no, he didn't. Now, right after this happened, I got an email from someone and said, do you understand the area that Mike disappeared in? And I got to be honest, at the beginning, I didn't. And they sent me to a website, and the name of my latest book is Missing 411, The Devil's in the Detail. The website they sent me to was developed in 2011 and hasn't been touched. And it's about the Sespe Wilderness and the Condor Sanctuary that's in the wilderness. And darn if the name of that website isn't The Devil's in the Detail.
Oh, my God.
I was floored. And the reason the guy came up with that is because there are so many devil names, geographical locations inside this area. There's an area called Devil's Heart Peak, which is in the center of the Sespe Wilderness, right near the Condor Sanctuary. There's another place called the Devil's Gateway, another place called the Devil's Potrero. And in my books, the reason I named my book that is because a lot of people over the last 5 years that we've done research on have disappeared in those geographical areas where there's devil in the name.
Now, this gets stranger, David, by the minute.
I tell you, the people that I'm around, that I talk to every day, that I work with, we look each other in the eye sometimes and can't believe what we found.
Okay, so in Herdman's case, he goes running into the woods, chasing his dog, doesn't have any shoes on. How far do you go into the woods before you say, you know what, folks, this is futile. I'm not going to continue chasing my dog. I'll wait for him to come back. I'm going back to my camp. You don't keep going. He apparently did, or something happened.
Well, there's a lot of people that sent me emails that said, well, we think he fell as he ran into the woods, and maybe he broke his leg and he can't get out. And I explained that Tyler Byers took the search crew into the location where Mike disappeared. And there's been 200 people searching for a week in a grid pattern out of that area. And if Mike did break his leg, he can still yell for help. That's
right.
Number one.
Right.
Number two, they got permission from the Forest Service to throw drones up into the sky, along with some helicopters with FLIR that are looking for a specific heat pattern from people.
Thermal imaging.
Correct. And they haven't come up with any images. Now, one thing that everyone was looking for was his dog, Duke. And searchers had seen him during that week running around, but they couldn't get him. And then on Sunday, June 22nd, 9 days after he disappeared, Duke showed up at the trailhead where Mike's car was originally parked.
So he did come back.
came back.
Did they catch him?
They got him.
Without Mike?
No Mike. And they said that he looked a little weathered, a little beaten up, just from the elements. And they were going to take him in and give him some injections or something and try to get him going. But the dog did not appear like it wanted to go back into the woods.
Like it was petrified?
That they didn't use those words, but they said it wasn't in condition enough to go back in.
You know, I know, David, talking to you, that you don't want to speculate on cases like this. But there's got to be a point where even you have to come up with some theory yourself, correct?
Well, and you bring up a good point, and everyone that I work with is constantly hammered about this. And let's go back 5 years. When we first started to do this, after the first year of just compiling cases and looking at 1,500 missing persons cases like this, we really didn't have a good grasp on much other than a few things started to fall out. And that being, you know, it was pretty obvious that people were being found without certain pieces of clothing or without shoes. A few cases started to show up where they were missing in these areas with hell or demon or devil in the name. And at the end of that first year, I got that same response. You know what's going on and you just don't want to say. And I can tell you that there are reviews right now on Amazon for my latest book from a couple of people that said specifically, if you thought that you knew what was happening after the first three or four books, wait till you read this book and you'll have a drastic paradigm shift. Because in this latest book, we keep going with the elements we've discovered in the other books, but we gradually transition until you realize that this just isn't a land-based phenomenon. And a lot of people thought it had to be a land-based creature, mm-hmm. entity or something. That's not it. But I tell everybody, you better read at least one other of the missing 411 books before you read this latest one. Otherwise, the statistics and the data that we gathered, you won't be able to appreciate it because it won't make so much sense to you.
Now, let's talk about Herdman for a second. I mean, realistically, and this is conjecture on your part, but if a guy goes chasing his dog, I mean, really, David, how far is he going to go? Is he going to go, you know, a couple hundred feet, a football length away? He's not going to keep going into the woods, is he?
Well, like I said, George, earlier, if it was me, I'm not going at all into the woods. I'm going to wait another 10 or 20 seconds until I can just throw my shoes on.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, his decision was, I'm going right now. Boom. Off he goes. But, I mean, you don't keep going. And let's assume something had attacked him for some reason. Don't you think his colleague would have been close enough to have heard that echoing scream throughout the woods?
Absolutely.
That never happened.
Now, in many of the books, we write about cases where parents say, my child was right behind me and disappeared.
Poof, gone.
Gone. And if you hear it once or twice, you think, well, maybe the parents are just trying to rationalize it away, make the story sound a little better, make them feel better as parents. But we've heard this dozens and dozens of times. And you're not going to hear a scream. You're not going to hear something like this. I mean, we've documented 1,200 cases now, and many of them occur just like that.
Are they falling into portals or other dimensions, as far-fetched as that may seem?
You know, I'm not somebody that's going to say no to anything at this point, because there's something about this phenomena that's real, that we've documented through factual cases, that very few people have ever denied. And Herdman's case, we've gotten hundreds of emails saying, you know, you got to be aware of this, you got to be following this, and we are. And I got to say, up to this point, it fits exactly into what we've written about in the past.
Of those who disappear, how many are found alive? What percent?
Maybe 35.
35% are found alive, and do they say similar things, or are most of those cases what one would call natural disappearances, and they just got lost and they got found?
So part of that profile has to do with a large group of these people that disappear or also have disabilities. Namely, maybe they have autism, maybe they have some kind of congenital older person's disease. Maybe they disappear so young they can't even talk. And when they're found, they can't explain what happened. And of the people that do disappear that are able to talk, the vast, vast majority of them don't remember anything.
David, we're going to talk more about this, more disappearances, and we'll take some phone calls up next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We'll get to your calls with David Politis in just a moment here as we talk about people who are missing, and there are more. Karen Sykes, David, an outdoor writer, except she was found dead near Mount Rainier.
And so in the last 18 months, we've named Mount Rainier National Park as one of the 58 clusters of missing people in North America through our research. She not only was an outdoor writer, she was also a marathon runner. And in the last 14 months, that's a subgroup that we've identified, runners or outdoor runners who have disappeared under unusual circumstances. Karen was hiking with a friend on June 18th. They reached about 5,000 feet. And the friend said he just wanted to wait. And she said, I'm just going to go ahead a little bit. And the friend said she couldn't have gone those very far because they were reaching snow, and he didn't think that she'd cross into the snow area. Well, she didn't come back. She disappeared. And her friends, while she was gone, said she was the last person on Earth anyone would believe would disappear.
Jeez.
Hiking, because she knew Mount Rainier and the trails better than anybody. She was an outdoor writer and specifically wrote an article about safety on the trails. She was carrying a backpack with safety gear, and they said if she was out overnight that she had the gear to survive. Well, needless to say, the search goes on for a couple days. They're finding nothing. The third day, they find her in an area called Boundary Creek. Now, to get from where she was to Boundary Creek, she had to go from about 5,000 feet up a 1,200-foot ridge, back down the other side, into an area that was described as difficult to access and not commonly traveled.
Hmm.
So while she was on that ridge, she could have turned around and looked where she came from. That's how obvious it is.
Right.
Plus, she's walking up into deeper snow, which doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense at all.
She's also been called the guru of the trails by her editor and other people that were close to her. This makes zero sense, George.
And none of them leave notes behind, little inscriptions, I'm lost and I'm dying. Nothing like that, David.
No. And the two common ways that these people die that we write about is either hypothermia, and that's kind of a catch-all for everything. And the other thing that's really uncommon, but common in these disappearances, is the coroner can't determine the cause of death. And that's, you don't hear about it a lot because the press won't publicize it. But when you get down into the minutia and you get the reports back, they said a cause of death can't be determined.
This is so strange. Let's take a few calls, and then there's a few more cases I want to talk with you about, more disappearances. Let's go to Dolores in Boston. Welcome to the phone call. Dolores, you are on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Dolores.
George.
Hi.
I have a question. You just had an exorcist, Dan. One thing occurred to me. Do these people happen to be Christians? Were they baptized? And then an addendum part of it is, my family with four children, two parents, is going to Yellowstone. And that's one of the big areas. And
that's
trying
huge.
To tell them. And are there devil areas there?
Well, David, Yosemite is a park noted for disappearances, is it not?
Yosemite is the largest cluster of disappearances we've documented anywhere in the world.
Anywhere?
Anywhere.
Serial killers, mishaps, paranormal, the supernatural, who knows what?
Well, I think that everyone who reads the book can quickly decipher that it's not a serial killer.
No, that's the least of your theories, to be sure. What about Bigfoot? Does that come up?
It comes up occasionally, but after you read the latest book, Bigfoot kind of gets wiped off the map because there's aerial disappearances and there's water disappearances that fit the profile that we're sticking by. That kind of shows that can't be it.
Jeez. And Dolores, to quickly answer your other question, the exorcist was a Christian. He's Catholic. Let's go next to Linda in Bloomington, Illinois. Hey, Linda, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
George, you have the greatest shows, and thank you for taking my call.
Very well.
About 25, maybe even 30 years ago, I had a cousin that disappeared in Washington State, and her car was parked alongside of a convenience store. Oh. I know the name of the town, but I don't want to say it on the air.
I understand.
And it was parked alongside of a convenience store. They found her purse. Everything was inside. She was nowhere to be seen. Her mom and dad would fly back and forth out there because the police would call and say, well, they found a body, but they didn't know who it was. So they would go out to see if it was her. It was not her. Her parents died not knowing whatever happened.
They never got closure. Ugh. Frustrating.
They never knew. And the rest of the family is still alive. And to this day, they don't know. So a couple of years ago, I got on the phone and I called out there to the police department. And I brought this up to them and talked to them about it. Because in my mind, I was thinking Green River Killer. But they said no. There was no chance of her being taken by him. But they had no idea. Nobody knows whatever happened to that woman. She had been married, divorced, and she had four daughters. And they were only, the daughters were like in their late teens. And like they said, she never would have left those kids. And to this day, they do not know where she went.
Another frustrating case. I don't know, David, this might even have been a case you looked at.
You know, George, we stay solely with urban disappearances.
Okay.
So if it was anywhere near a city or inside a city, we probably haven't worked it.
All right, understand. So these disappearing people in parks, state parks, federal parks, are they always with somebody or are they alone?
You know, initially they're with someone, and then for some reason or another, they get ahead of the them on the trail, or they're behind them on the trail, or they get distracted in some means. There's not one common way, but it almost appears as though there's some segment of opportunity that comes forward, and it's in that brief moment of opportunity that something bad happens.
Just talking about Yosemite, you had a case called involving Anita Mayo, did you not?
Yes, and in fact, it's right on key for what we've talked about in the past. And there's an area 42 miles east of Sonora on Highway 108, and it's called Donnell Vista, and it's a lookout that looks out over Donnell Lake or Donnell Reservoir. And let's step back into October of 1997. A man disappears, and just by accident, they found his body below that vista. And that man was reported 9 days earlier as missing. They found his body below that lookout, and they called it an accidental death. And I bring that up because that's the first thing that happened at that location that we can find that's unusual. But these things don't happen back to back to back in a specific area. Otherwise, everyone would take notice of it. These are always separated by 8-9 years minimum, sometimes 15 or 20 years. So you go from 97 to August 8, 2005, and Anita Mayo was a resident of Hawthorne, Nevada. She was a licensed practical nurse working at Mount Grant Hospital. And she was driving over into California to visit some relatives. She was driving a 97 Mercury Sable station wagon. And she pulled into Strawberry, and she bought some trinkets in the store. And after she left Strawberry, she drove out to the Vista. And apparently, from what everyone can find, the only thing that was missing was her camera and her keys. Her purse, let me correct that, her camera was missing. That was the only thing.
The
doors were locked. Caltrans people found the car. The purse, the keys, the cell phone were in the car. And her prescription glasses, they also said, were missing.
Maybe she took a picture of whatever.
And you know, George, this is another subgroup that we've talked about in the books, and that is photographers. People that go missing in the woods carrying a camera with specific intent to take pictures. They vanish. Anita vanished, and they took the car as evidence. They've never had one clue as to what happened to this woman. And I wrote that up in one of the books. Now, fast forward 9 years, April 22nd of this year, Patty Sue Albright, 46 years old, she owned a restaurant in Sonora, well-known in the community. she's going to go take a hike in Kennedy Meadows, she told some people. For some reason or another, she turned into Donnell Vista Lookout in her Toyota 4Runner. The sunroof was open, and they found the car with the roof open. Apparently it had rained, and the keys to the car were gone. Her purse was inside the car, and she was nowhere to be found. Giant search of that surrounding area. She's never been found.
Gosh, just doesn't make any sense. First-time caller, Robert in Tucson, Arizona. Robert, go ahead. Thank you for calling.
Hi, George.
Hey, Robert.
I had a question about the camper and his dog.
Sure.
I wonder if it's occurred to anyone that the dog ran into the woods out of fright. And so did the camper. That's why he didn't stop to put his shoes on. They might have both been running away from something.
Well, the other guy was there, though, was he not, David?
Correct.
And so he would have been a witness if there was something going on in the campsite.
So he didn't run. He stayed where he was.
He stayed where he was, yeah. There was nothing there that he feared, unless they were running from him, David.
Well, you know, I guess that could be alleged, but Tyler Byers is a stellar guy, a fellow firefighter, paramedic. A stellar person. I wouldn't think anything of this guy other than he's just a great person.
Gosh, if the dog could only talk.
Exactly.
What a story that would be. Let's go to Jason in Farmington, Missouri. Jason, thanks for calling, and you are on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey,
hi, David.
Hello there.
The reason why I was calling that is that I always love it when David's on. It just, it's so interesting. But I have a story that about 2 years ago I was deer hunting, and I was in Ironton, Missouri, and I was pretty deep in the woods. And I was probably about 5 miles deep in the woods, and I got this feeling like something was watching me.
Uh-oh.
And it was such an uneasy feeling. And I got turned around in the woods is what happened, the reason why I was so deep. And I was trying to walk out of it. And I ended up going about 7 or 8 miles, and I got to this part in the woods where everything was just like, I don't know, the trees and everything, there were no animals moving. It was just like dead. The air was dead. And there was something that, I know you guys have gotten that feeling before, like something's watching you.
Oh, yeah.
There was something watching me. I couldn't see it.
But you felt it. You knew.
I felt it. And it got me so freaked out. And I'm an experienced hunter. I sit down to a tree, a big tree, put my back against a tree with my gun out. And I sat there for probably like an hour. You know, I was just like, I was shaking. You know, I could just tell there was something there. I couldn't see it, but I felt, and it felt evil.
And did it go away when you just basically went home or walked away?
Well, eventually, the forest, like, it come back to life. I know that sounds strange, but it's like the hair went away. Lighter.
Okay, I see what you mean. Like, the creature, whatever it was, disappeared and things came back.
Yeah, then the animal started moving around again. Then I had to walk like 3 more miles out of the forest, but it was a terrifying experience.
Well, I'm glad you walked out of that situation. And David, let me ask you if there are any UFO reports in the areas where people disappear.
You know, specifically tied together, no, but the story the man just said, I've told almost the exact same story on Coast to Coast before. It happened to myself and a friend that were bear hunting up in Northern California, and we did the exact same thing he did. We sat on the opposite side of a Douglas fir tree for about 45 minutes. Forest came back to life. Sounds came back.
Yeah.
I looked at my buddy who's hunted for about 50 years, and he said, Dave, I've never, ever experienced that.
Let's outline the possibilities. So I'm not gonna push you against the wall here, but let's talk about the possibilities. Bigfoot, ETs, natural causes, some kind of shift in the time warp, like a dimensional shift. You got to throw, though you say it's minimal, you got to throw in some serial killer or some murderer. What else is out there, David? What are the other possibilities? What am I missing?
Well, let's eliminate one right away. The serial killer idea, everyone who reads the books will understand why that cannot be a possibility.
Right,
namely because nobody can carry a person our size, George, through the woods for more than a mile.
No, you can't. That's true.
You know, it's just too debilitating. And so the opportunity to move that person a great distance isn't there. And as I've stated before, whatever is doing this does it with 100% effectiveness.
And it's fast and it's silent, apparently.
Exactly. And they've never made a mistake, because if they had made a mistake, you or I would have heard about it.
Somebody would have. There would be some evidence, some pathology, something would find something. These forensics, they're too good these days.
So I'll tell you a story that came into us about 2 years ago. Is a person was hunting up in Colorado, and he said he was trucking along a trail, hunting, was trying to get to a location, so was moving kind of fast. And he said he saw something ahead of him that almost looked like you were looking in a warped mirror that wasn't real clear. And he goes, I slowed down almost to a crawl, and I approached this. And he says, I swear to you, I put one foot forward as I was stopped, and I lost sight of my foot, but I could see part of my leg, almost like you're putting it into a wall.
Wow.
He says, I pulled my foot back through and started to back away because whatever it was not good.
That is amazing. Kind of reminds me of the Twilight Zone episode, Little Girl Lost, when she fell out of her bed, basically, and wandered into another dimension, and her father had to go in there to get her. And it was like a whole new world. It does sound far-fetched, David, but you know what? I don't think we can rule out any of this.
I agree with you.
You got to tell me which way you're tipping, though. Tell me.
Well, again, a lot of people thought at the beginning that I had it nailed just because it happened in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
But as you move forward, and if you're a researcher and you stick with the profile that's established, but you keep an open mind.
You've changed, right.
Well, there's the best example is there were three guys that were fishing off the coast of Florida, and they happened to be jockeys, really, really good jockeys, that were going to be in the Kentucky Derby and Belmont in a couple months. And they were fishing in a small skiff that was being watched by a big yacht. Immediately, as they get in position in water that's only 2 or 3 feet deep, a storm comes in. Part of the profile, there's bad weather associated with these disappearances. And storm comes in to the point where they get washed away from this boat into a small little cove. Make a long story short, this boat goes in as far as it can. Not only were the three guys never found, none of their equipment was ever found, and it was in one of the biggest searches ever in Florida at that point.
Weird. Like they were taken.
Well, the author of the article, one of the articles we read, said these guys could have just gotten out of the boat and walked ashore.
But they didn't.
No, it was a small island, and they were never found.
Somebody's taken these. Something is being, they're going into another dimension. They're being beamed aboard a ship. Something's happening, David.
There is no doubt in my mind that something extremely unusual is happening to these people. And I wish I could nail it, and maybe with time we can. I mean, just in the last year, three families have approached me and talked to me about what happened to their relative. And in each one of those incidents, we've been stunned by what we've learned that isn't in the press.
David, we've got to follow up with more with you on a later show. I'm George Norrie, and we will be back with investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe. This is her turn, and she's next.